First Samuel. We're in 1 Samuel 20. First Samuel 28. This is where we left off a couple weeks back before I left, so let's pick this back up. I'm going to read the first few verses for you so we'll know where we're at. Saul is the king in Israel. Of course, he's interested in finding David and all those things. So in chapter 28, verse 1, we read, "It came to pass in those days that the Philistines gathered their armies together for warfare to fight with Israel. And Achish," you remember that David had fled to the Philistines, and Achish was their king. "And Achish said unto David, Know thou assuredly that thou shalt go out with me to battle, thou and thy men. And David said to Achish, Surely thou shalt know what thy servant can do. And Achish said to David, Therefore will I make thee a keeper of mine head forever." Now Samuel was dead, and all Israel had lamented him and buried him in Ramah. This is the reason that I drew this board on the board. This is the Dead Sea, as you know, Jordan River, Sea of Galilee. Jerusalem is right up here. And Samuel was buried, his home and his burial was in Ramah, which is somewhere there, around there. I can't get very detailed here because of the size of the map and all that. It's not that important. But I wanted you to see verse 3. Him being dead, they buried him in Ramah, even in his own city. And Saul had put away those that had familiar spirits and the wizards out of the land. And the Philistines gathered themselves together and came and pitched in Shunem. Saul gathered all Israel together, and they pitched in Gilboa. Now, I wanted you to see where that is. It's up here, up by the southern edge of the Sea of Galilee, up in this area here. Both Mount Gilboa and Shunem, these cities that you're going to be hearing about. Interestingly enough, Saul is a type of the Antichrist. And this is Mount Carmel here on the Mediterranean coast. That's where Elijah kills all those false prophets of Baal and the prophets of the sun. And what runs, this is where the Valley of Megiddo runs. This is the Kishon River. And so this is the Valley of Megiddo. So this puts all this happenstance that involves familiar spirits and Saul finally coming to his end right up here near the Valley of Megiddo, which is just kind of an interesting setting considering that Saul is a type of the Antichrist. But going on, it says in verse 4, "And the Philistines gathered themselves together, came and pitched in Shunem. And Saul gathered all Israel together, and they pitched in Gilboa," Mount Gilboa. "And when Saul saw the host of the Philistines, he was afraid. His heart greatly trembled. And when Saul inquired of the Lord answered him not, neither by dreams, nor by Urim, nor by prophets." Now, we talked about that some time back with David having the breastplate. The breastplate was actually a folded piece of cloth with a pouch in it. And within that pouch was supposed to be carried something called the Urim and Thummim. And it's a mystery what those are. It must be something like a stone or something like that to fit in something that small. But somehow or another, the Lord spake to David and to his prophets at times by Urim. And we know from the Old Testament that sometimes the Lord spoke to kings through prophets by dreams as well. And then it says, neither by dreams, nor by Urim, nor by prophets. Saul has backslidden far enough now that the Lord's not talking to him. So he has a problem. He's about to go into battle against his lifelong enemies, the Philistines. And this is what comes to pass. "Then said Saul unto his servants, Seek me a woman that hath a familiar spirit, that I may go to her and inquire of her. And his servants said unto him, Behold, there is a woman that hath a familiar spirit at Endor." And again, Endor is right up here along this big dot. Gilboa's up here. Shunem's here. She's known as the, they call her the Witch of Endor. It never says she's a witch, but it does, there is the connotation there with some other verses we'll show you. But this is where all that takes place, right up there. Goes on to say in verse 8, Saul disguised himself, put on other raiment, and went and two men with him, and they came to the woman by night. And he said, I pray thee, divine unto me by the familiar spirit. Now she's essentially, you know, like a tarot card reader, a fortune teller, you know, like a gypsy type scenario type thing. I know you're not supposed to call them gypsies anymore, but whatever. But that's what's going on. So we need to think about this, because it said back in verse 3 that he had put away those that had familiar spirits. We need to look at familiar spirits here for a little while. This woman, you'll notice in verse 7, she hath a familiar spirit. Twice, she hath a familiar spirit. Verse 8, divine unto me by the familiar spirit. Verse 9, Saul has cut off those that have familiar spirits. So some folks back in those days had familiar spirits, so they spake by familiar spirits. And so we need to think about some of that for a little while here. I'm not trying to drag you off into something that you need to stay ignorant of. You just need to be aware that since we are, first of all, primarily spiritual beings, God created you in His image, right? And while we've been fallen now for 6,000 years, we are still created primarily spiritual beings. The problem is you're locked into this stinking flesh. And so, since you're primarily a spiritual being, that's why all the atheists make a religion out of atheism. And that's why all the New Agers make a religion out of New Ageism, okay? Because primarily we are spiritual. And being spiritual, well, God is a spirit. We were made to commune with God because Adam and Eve, our father and mother, died because of their disobedience, died spiritually. Well, the devil stepped in the picture, and now somebody born into this world has to spend his lifetime trying to sort out basically the spirit world that is light, that comes to him from God, versus the spirit world that is on the devil's side, that's darkness and evil, and comes to him from that side. And because of primarily our fallen nature at this juncture, then you probably don't have to guess who most usually gets control of somebody's life. So we need to discuss that for a little while. I'm not trying to drag you off into weirdo demon possession stuff. I just need you to be aware that in every facet of our lives as men and women, fallen creatures before God, that there is this tug and this pull of spiritual warfare in our lives. And, you know, because you may have watched at some juncture, you know, witchcraft shows or Hollywood and their, you know, special effects and all those things, you may think that you know what demon possession looks like, but what does the Bible say it looks like? And what kind of influences are involved? We need to talk about that, because these are called familiar spirits. Familiar. Like, you know what being familiar is. Sounds to me like man was supposed to fellowship with God in holiness. And now, since we're fallen, we have this proclivity, this inclination towards being familiar with the wrong kinds of spirits. And it sounds like that whereas God intended us to fellowship with Him, our tendency would always be to be deceived by the devil's minions, and that we would be flirting with familiar spirits, which are at times called unclean spirits or evil spirits. And again, I'm not trying to be spooky here. I'm just trying to, you know, warn you what you're living with here in 2023. You would have been living with it at some level in 1700 too. But 2023... is really interesting, because now it's pretty intense, right? So Where do we start here? Well, first of all, familiar spirits. Go with me, if you will, to a few places. I'm not going to beat you to death with a lot of these, but there's quite a bit to cover tonight, I think. Look, if you will, in Leviticus, all the way to the Old Testament. I want you to know how God feels about this. Leviticus chapter 19. Leviticus 19. Here's what we can say to start with. If you're fooling around with tarot cards and Ouija boards and spending your time with, I think there's a show called Enchanted or Supernatural or something that's like a regular series type show. In fact, it may be quite old now. I only know about it from just seeing blurbs. But all that stuff leads you to a place where you're more open to be familiar with it. And that stuff is forbidden by God all the way back in the Old Testament. Look in Leviticus chapter 19. Go on down, if you will, to verse 29. Do not prostitute thy daughter to cause her to be a whore, lest the land fall to whoredom and the land become full of wickedness. Now, I know this is primarily to Israel. No problem. You shall keep my Sabbaths. That's to Israel. And reverence my sanctuary. I am the Lord. But this is how he feels about these familiar spirits. This is the first occurrence of familiar spirits in the Bible. Regard not them that have familiar spirits. Somebody has a familiar spirit. And it's not, you know, seldom enough that he feels like he doesn't have to warn anybody. Apparently, it's very common. Regard not them that have familiar spirits. Doesn't say how they got them. But they got them. Neither seek after wizards. That's a connection. So it's not too much to say that wizards and witches and witchcraft are, you know, joined with familiar spirits to be defiled by them. It's a defiling thing. Now, if it was a defiling thing to Israel, I got news for you. Doctrinally, it's a defiling thing for you. We may not have to keep the Sabbath. We may not have to circumcise our male children. But you should stay away from this nonsense. And it's very easy to get off into because you have tarot card readers. Gene Dixon used to be in the paper all the time. If you read a newspaper, do you know what a newspaper is? Some of you youngins. But she gave your horoscope. That's all. There's a master list here I'll show you in a second, but it involves a lot of other things. And witchcraft and wizardry is involved in it. Look, if you will, at chapter 20, Leviticus 20, verse 6, where in connection with people worshiping Molech, which is a false god, in verse 2, says you're going to put them to death if they worship Molech. Molech you find in verse 3 and verse 4. And then it says in verse 5, then I will set my face against that man, against his family, and will cut him off, and all that go whoring after him to commit whoredom with Molech from among their people. And the soul that turneth after such as have familiar spirits and after wizards to go a whoring after them. So essentially, he's using the same phraseology, somebody chasing a false god, going a whoring after them, and I'm going to cut you off. It's the same as if you know, as when you talk to somebody with a familiar spirit. So God's against it altogether. I will even set my face against that soul and will cut him off from among his people. I know that's still an Old Testament thing. I know he's talking about Israel, but still, it's a serious thing, right? Go, if you will, to chapter 27. I'm not going to, like I said, beat you to death with all of these, but I'm sorry, chapter 20, verse 7. I misread that. Chapter 20, verse 27. A man also, or a woman that hath a familiar spirit, or that is a wizard, shall surely be put to death. They shall stone them with stones, their blood shall be upon them. Okay, I'm not saying that we need to kill witches. I'm saying in the Old Testament, the Lord did. Okay? So, tarot cards and playing around with Ouija boards and stuff and going to seances is not for you. Okay, just make that plain. You say, why do you say that? Because today Christians get off into all kinds of stuff. Now, we're going to follow this up with some more stuff. Look at, if you will, to Deuteronomy chapter 18, and I'll show you kind of a master list of things here that of this spiritism stuff that God is against. Deuteronomy chapter 18, and we can start reading down around verse 9. When thou art come into the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee, now it's talking about Israel, true enough, thou shalt not learn to do after the abominations of those nations. Okay, so here's the thing. The lost nations of the world that have no light, they all get off into this stuff. They all have their own gods. They all have their own religions. They all have their own culture. They all have their own holy things. American Indians have their gods. The Haitians have their gods. South Americans have their gods. Mayans, Incas, etc., etc. So it's the nations. But he says, of them, when thou art come into the land that which the Lord thy God giveth thee, thou shalt not learn to do after the abominations of those nations. In other words, you need to be separate from the cultures, the spiritual cultures of the nation you're probably born in. You say, well, this is America. This is a Christian country. You can get in plenty of trouble in America, right? Okay, verse 10. And there shall not be found among you anyone that maketh his son or his daughter to pass through the fire, or that useth divination. Now, you may not process somebody's son or daughter passing through the fire, but heathen pagans sometimes do sacrifice their kids in the river or in the volcano or whatever. You've heard of it, right? Okay, what might somebody in America sacrifice their kids to? You just need to think about that. Just think about the headlines. And tell me what your kids are being taught in public school today. What are you doing with those kids? I would even argue they'd be better off pitching into a volcano than what they're being taught to do, which is to mutilate themselves. Right? Or did you not process that that might have application here? It's still a sacrifice of the kids, right? Verse 10, to pass through the fire are that useth divination. So divination is out. What do they call the channelers? There's another word I'm trying to come up with now. Medium. Yeah, that's what this is. This is. Necromancers is necromancer. It's necro is death, somebody trying to communicate with the dead. Romancers is, you know what romance is. Necromancers is trying to commune with the dead. Verse 10, or an observer of times, or an enchanter, somebody that's willing to cast a spell, or a witch, or a charmer, or a consulter with familiar spirits. And so somebody consults, that's what we're studying, somebody consults with familiar spirits. It doesn't say the familiar spirits are fake. It doesn't say they're not real. Anything in the book has, you know, that where God mentions this is somebody is communing with familiar spirits. So you need to figure out where that's at, right? Verse 11. Or a wizard, or a necromancer. For all that do these things are abomination unto the Lord. And because of these abominations, the Lord thy God doth drive them out from before thee. This is the reason that Israel was commanded to go into the land of Canaan and kill everybody. Not save their pictures, not save their culture, not keep any statues around to remember their fine culture by. Tear it all down, raise it to the ground, start from scratch. Because these guys finally crossed the line. the Ammonites finally reached the threshold where God was fed up with them and wanted them dead. He wants to raise up a holy nation in Israel, a literal, physical, political holy nation in Israel. And he's going to run these people out and try, and Israel never did destroy them. God wanted them destroyed so that he had the freedom to do with Israel as he pleased. But the reason those nations were finally, you know, the Lord said finally, go get them, is because of stuff like this, in addition to some other things that I could name. Okay? See, God doesn't think like we think. And do not misunderstand. I am not calling a cavalry charge for us to go kill wicked people. We're called to convert wicked people. Okay? So just don't make that mistake. But this is the God of the Old Testament, who, by the way, is still the God of the New. It's just that he's now doing stuff different than he did then. Namely, because doesn't have Israel before him right now. He has the church before him. And we do things this way until the day that the Lord really does clean house. And he's gonna. Okay, I know I'm getting off a little bit on that, but let me just take you to a couple other places. 1 Chronicles 10, real quick. We're talking about familiar spirits. 1 Chronicles 10. Trying to get background here so that we can make some, so we can draw some conclusions. 1 Chronicles 10, verse 13. You just need to know that, among other things, you know, Saul was eventually cast off because of a lot of things, but notice what's specifically mentioned here. 1 Chronicles 10, 13. This is the account, this is what goes on with what we're reading now in 1 Samuel. So Saul died for his transgression, which he committed against the Lord, even against the word of the Lord, when he disobeyed the word, which he kept not, and also for asking counsel of one that had a familiar spirit to inquire of it, and inquired not of the Lord. So at least part of the equation was that's what, you know, kind of was the straw that broke the camel's back, is God said, I killed him for asking counsel of one that had a familiar spirit. So, you have no business going to a tarot card. You got no business asking a Ouija board anything. Run over it. Don't ask it nothing. Okay? Now, let me just run you forward to Manasseh, who is one of the worst kings that Israel ever had, and notice what the Lord remembered about him. 2 Chronicles 33. Manasseh reigned 55 years, and he did according to all the abominations of the heathen. And you'll notice in verse 6, 33:6, 2 Chronicles, he caused his children to pass through the fire in the valley of the son of Hinnom. Also he observed times and used enchantments, used witchcraft, and dealt with a familiar spirit. He dealt with a familiar spirit. Sounds like he was talking to the familiar spirit. It's not like Saul going to somebody that had one. It sounds almost like there, Manasseh's dealing with the one directly. Right? That's what I think. And with wizards, he wrought much evil in the sight of the Lord to provoke him to anger. Okay, so back in 1 Samuel 28, then said Saul unto his servant, seek me a woman that hath a familiar spirit. Now, this is not real popular stuff these days, even in Christianity. He specified, seek me a woman that hath a familiar spirit. Now, I'm not against women. My mother was one. I married one. Okay, but the Bible talks about, first of all, the woman being a secondary creation. And I'm not trying to denounce anybody or anything. I'm just saying, ladies, you were taken from Adam's rib. You weren't made from the dust of the earth. He was made from the dust of the earth. Then he took you from Adam's rib to be his help meet for him. It's not ugly. There are no chains involved. Not tied to the stove. Just that the God's plan was that the man's the man, and he made the woman from the man, and woman is actually a contraction of womb man. A man with a womb. Okay? And so when Eve married Adam, God called their name Adam. Adam called her Eve. She was the mother of all living, but God called their name Adam. And that's why to this hour, when somebody gets married, generally, when she marries a Smith, her name becomes Smith. Not Smith-Halloway or whatever it was. I'm just saying. The further away you get from the Bible, the less you understand things. That's the reason it's done as it's done. Now, without going into the depths of it, in 1 Corinthians 11, the woman is to have power on her head because of the angels. And there's a reason why. I don't believe the woman was a weaker vessel because she was the first to sin. I think she was the weaker vessel because God from the beginning created her from Adam's side to be in help to him. Okay? And so in 1 Peter chapter 3, this does not go over well in Southern Baptist Sunday School, just so you know. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 7. Let me just say before we even go here, women do things that men can't do. I'm glad I don't have to have a baby. Okay? So, but chapter 3, verse 7, likewise ye husbands, dwell with them, their wives, according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel. If my house is burning, send in Eric. Don't send in one of the Dietz girls. You know what I'm saying? Don't send in Morgan. She's not going to be able to carry my big hind end out. Ladies, I'll give you a challenge. I think I can beat every one of you arm wrestling. And I haven't even been in training. Now, don't gang up on me. I'm just saying. By all rights, I should be able to beat every woman in here arm wrestling. And it carries over in some regard spiritually. Because I'm just saying, who did the devil get to first? It's Eve. In 1 Corinthians 11:10. He said the woman should have power on her head. And he's talking about a power structure where the man is under God, under Christ, and the woman is under the man as far as the hierarchy goes. In other words, man, when you start running your home because your husband won't step up or can't step up or whatever or can't get up, your home's going to be messed up. If you're the primary one raising the kids without the father's help, your kids are going to be messed up. There are entire subgroups ethnically all across the world where the fathers disavow responsibility for the kids, and all the kids are nothing but screwed up. Because primarily, the Lord makes the man strong first, and then the woman is supposed to be strong beneath the man. The man's supposed to be the leader. And so he tells the wives to submit themselves unto their own husbands. It's not a manifesto for slavery. It's just the way the Lord's hierarchy works as far as His avenues for dealing with people. If you put your kids above mom and dad, then things are messed up really bad. But if you put the woman above the man, then things are still messed up really bad. So, I'm just saying. Saul said, he didn't say, bring me a man with a familiar spirit. You know why? Because there weren't as many men with familiar spirits. Because it seemed like, you know, it's mostly women. And Saul said unto his servant, seek me a woman that hath a familiar spirit, that I may go to her and inquire of her. And his servants said unto him, behold, there is a woman that hath a familiar spirit in Endor. Like I said, she's known as the witch of Endor, but the Bible doesn't term her that. Never says she's a witch. Maybe she was, but it's kind of like everybody thinks that Goliath was a giant, but the Bible doesn't say he was a giant. We went through that some time back. Verse 8, and Saul disguised himself and put on other raiment, and he went and two men with him, and they came to the woman by night, and he said, I pray thee, divine unto me by the familiar spirit. So she's channeling. She's channeling this spirit, and bring me him up, whom I shall name unto thee. Now, I'll get into that bringing somebody up here in a second. Let me go back and say something more about this whole interaction between mortal man and spirits without getting spooky, weird, you know, National Geographic-y about it. Okay? Man is, first of all, spiritual. Okay? Now, some things about God. Look in Numbers 16. Numbers 16. Here's the deal. You don't know any of this stuff without a Bible. You can't figure any of it out. That's why somebody that doesn't have a Bible will go and they will get themselves into a scenario with some spiritual influence or entity, and it's real, it's emotional, it's powerful. They may even get answers, and they're locked in because it's real, okay? I don't know where the, you know, dramatization and, you know, TV and movie stuff stops and reality starts, because, you know, you can go anytime, and if you're flipping through the TV at a motel somewhere, you'll, I think, wind up on a travel channel or something where they're always going and trying to find ghosts and houses and stuff. Okay? And of course, you know, it's really real to them. I always get away from that channel as quickly as possible. I just go back to the food channel, which is my favorite. You never would have guessed that, I'm sure, but it is. Anyway. All right, number 16. Number 16, 22. Number 16, 22. And they fell upon their faces and said, O God, or addressing God, O God, the God of the spirits of all flesh. Okay? Apparently, all flesh has spirit. So you have a spirit, right? Lord said it's dead in sins until you get born again, okay? But remember the maniac of Gadara? When the spirits went out of him, they found other flesh to go into. A herd of pigs. And so I'm not going to go into it, but I've heard some pretty weird stories from some preachers that I respect and are not drama queens, who had experiences with, you know, spirits in strange places and things. I mean, I guess I shouldn't go into it because I'm not trying to pique anybody's interest much. But if you have to know that spirits are real, okay? Sometimes they're called familiar spirits. I don't know if there's a division between familiar evil spirits or wicked spirits or unclean spirits. My opinion is they're all unclean. Okay? I'm talking with the exception of the Holy Spirit, right? But let me just keep rolling. God is the spirit of He is the God of the spirits of all flesh. Look in 1 Kings 22. 1 Kings 22. And you have a couple of kings here. One of those kings is on really shady ground because the Lord is willing to deceive him. The guy doesn't want the truth to start with, so the Lord is willing to deceive him. 1 Kings 22, go on down to verse 19. He said, "Hear thou therefore the word of the Lord. I saw the Lord sitting on his throne, and all the host of heaven standing by him on his right hand, on his left. The Lord said, Who shall persuade Ahab that he may go up and fall at Ramoth-Gilead? And one said on this manner, and another said on that manner. And then there came forth a spirit." It doesn't say, I know that this scene is in heaven, but the devil has access to heaven right now. You do know that, right? The devil's not locked in hell yet. Not till the millennium. And just because something shows up in heaven doesn't mean it's pure, spiritually speaking. So this doesn't mean that this is an angelic spirit here. Because notice, there came forth a spirit and stood before the Lord and said, "I will persuade him." The Lord said unto him, "Wherewith?" And he said, "I will go forth and I will be a lying spirit in the mouth of all his prophets." You will recall that Saul wound up with an evil spirit. Where did that spirit come from? It says from the Lord. Now, again, I'm not trying to throw you into a moral conundrum here. It's just to say that, you know, somebody doesn't want the truth, and the Lord has at his disposal all kinds of spirits that he's the God over. And some of them are going, "Let me get him, let me get him, let me get him." You know, right? That's what Satan was doing with Job, right? I mean, think with me here. Encourage me here. You're with me, right? And so, why wouldn't the Lord, you know, a spirit step up and say, "I'll go deceive him"? Lord says, "Go." And that's what happens here. And so, there are spirits that intermingle with man. There were spirits. Spirits abounded in Christ's day. I mean, over and over again, he's casting out spirits. And it was a common thing for men to know when a guy, one of their neighbors, had a familiar spirit or an evil spirit or an unclean spirit. It happened all the time. Okay, if we're now waiting, if that happened at the first advent of Christ, here we are near the second advent of Christ, I wonder if any of that's still going on. You know, as it was in the days of Noah, well, as it was in the first days of Jesus, so wonder what it's going to be like when Jesus comes again. And yet all of us look around and nobody's saying, "Whoa," you know, I know Pentecostals do, charismatics do, but I'm talking about in the world, most folks don't look around and say, "Boy, that guy's got an evil spirit." They're so naive, they wouldn't recognize a spirit if it showed up. So we have to talk a little bit later about what some of that might look like, but let me just continue here. Look at Acts chapter 16, a little after Christ's death, but Acts chapter 16. I'm canvassing a lot of material here, but anybody here should know you have no business consulting or, I don't know, communing with a familiar spirit. You need to concentrate on communing with the Spirit of God. Okay, Acts chapter 16. And so you notice here, in verse 16, this is Paul's ministry now. "It came to pass, as we went to prayer, a certain damsel," the damsel's a girl the last time I noticed, and it's funny, she's a female again, I'm just saying. Not condemning, I'm just saying. "A certain damsel possessed with a spirit of divination met us, which brought her masters much gain by soothsaying." Okay, well, she's, you know, she's a medium. And by the way, it came to pass, same followed Paul and us and cried, saying, "These men are the servants of the Most High God, which show unto us the way of salvation." Well, that's true. And this did she many days, but Paul being grieved. Why would he be grieved? Because essentially, it's a devil telling the truth. It's like me being grieved because the Catholic Church teaches that Mary was a virgin and that Christ was the Son of God. Amidst all the rest of her abominable lies, it's a grief. So I would never, ever, ever send somebody to the Catholic Church to get the gospel. Ever. Ever. You see what I'm saying? So Paul's grieved for that reason, and so he shuts her up and casts it out. Being grieved, turned and said to the Spirit, I command thee in the name of Jesus Christ to come out of her. And he came out the same hour. But she has a spirit of divination, and so she can acknowledge the truth. This may say something that a devil will tell you a certain amount of the truth. I mean, she is saying, these men are the servants of the Most High God, which show us the way of salvation, and then turn right around and be talking devilish stuff the next moment. Okay, that said, this is how it might look. 1 Timothy chapter 4. There's somebody with a spirit of divination, so I mean, I know you got a problem if you go to the horse track, probably, if you're betting, but you have somebody who is really good at telling you which horse is going to win. Wonder how they know. You need to stop. You need to stop. 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 1. Now the Spirit speaketh expressly, that in the latter times some shall depart from the faith, giving heed to seducing spirits. Okay, you've departed from the faith when you give heed to seducing spirits. The spirits seduce. They try to draw you in. So when a church starts, and the first Sunday that they start up, they have 3,500 people there. And the people are there because of the music, the laser light show, and the entertainment. I wonder what's going on there. Because it ain't conviction. There's a seduction going on. I'm drawing them with something licentious in the music and the theatrics, the drama, and rather than coming in and opening a Bible, it's dramatizations at best, right? Okay, seducing spirits and doctrines of devils. Can I just say that devils teach doctrines? And so once again, if the damsel with the spirit of divination is expressing rightly who Paul is, and also expressing that he's showing them truly the way of salvation, and yet he's still grieved and casts the devil out of her, then that devil is teaching some wrong things as well. And so I'm only saying that the Spirit speaketh expressly that in the latter times some shall depart from the faith, giving heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of devils, speaking lies and hypocrisy. Okay, somebody's teaching something. So what you need to think about is, how would you come under the influence of a spirit, among other things? It would be something that you would hear. It would be something that you would be taught. Because I know this, because faith cometh by hearing, and hearing by the Word of God. So if I'm putting out a distorted, perverted doctrine, and you come listen to it long enough, you're probably going to absorb it and believe it. Because there are people in this country that have been taught evolution now for, you know, nearly 100 years. Right. They consider it a fact. Yep. It's among the stupidest things you ever heard in your life. Amen. Right? Yeah. I mean, look what has happened just in, here we go again. Look what's happened just in the recent years. We went from homosexual marriage to some girls aren't girls and some boys aren't boys. They came wrongly equipped. And now, I mean, your governor stood a little 8-year-old boy up the other day trying to push through legislation. The little boy had on a dress and had girl's hair and was on his way to becoming a girl. Your governor, himself a school teacher, was doing that. He's also demon-possessed. And that's the issue, is that you hear something long enough and it affects you because you hear, because faith cometh by hearing. And if you're hearing all the wrong stuff, that's why I say, I'm not ashamed to say at all that we're here brainwashing you. We're brainwashing you in the good stuff, whereas somebody else is going to try to brainwash you in the bad stuff. It's really all... Did you realize that propaganda is not always negative? Technically, propaganda can be positive. And propaganda is just putting out information. If the information is not the truth, then a negative brainwashing is taking place. As for me, I'm doing the best I can to wash my brain in the right stuff all the time. And I really think that I'm in my right mind. And I know they don't think so. But I am. I don't believe some of the crazy stuff they believe. Okay, we got to quit. I'm running a little late. We'll pick this up again next time around. But any questions or comments at the moment? I knew you were going to say something.